Well, Richard Reed, he pleaded guilty and was given a life sentence for his plot to essentially light up his shoe and set off an explosive on a transatlantic flight back in 2001. He's been in the Supermax federal prison in Florence, Colorado, pretty much since then, and has been in solitary confinement, has had a lot of restrictions placed on him. And recently, in June, after a review by the Justice Department's Counterterror Division, by the FBI, and by prosecutors, it was decided that some of his restrictions could be lifted. Specifically, he will now be able to send mail to his family and receive mail from his family. He will be able to get news periodicals more recent than he did before. Before, he could get them about a month after they came out. Now he can get them essentially the same week. Now, those may seem like fairly rudimentary things, but there's some terrorism experts, some law enforcement experts we spoke to, including former New York City Police Commissioner Howard Safer, who are pretty outraged at this and saying, you know, a terrorist on the level of Richard Reed should not be able to correspond, should not be able to, you know, to have those kind of privileges, that, that he should just be kept essentially isolated. So they're pretty upset about it.
So is there a way of protesting this, or what happens, or is it we've decided and we move on?
Well, I think the protests were in the form of some of the interviews these people gave for the media who found out about this. And again, some of us, you know, really didn't catch on to this until recently. This decision was made back in June. So he's essentially been able to get mail and to read these periodicals for the last couple of months. Now, it's important to point out, though, what the Justice Department says about this. We talked to an official there who said, look, he is still very, very restricted. He cannot physically interact with any of the other inmates. He is in solitary confinement 23 hours a day. When you talk about the other inmates, you're talking, though, about the convicted World Trade Center bomber Ramzi Youssef. You're talking about 9/11 plotters Zakarias Moussaoui. Those are some of the other people who are in that prison with him. But they are clear that he is not able to interact with them. But and another very important point that the Justice Department makes is that all of his correspondence, his mail to and from his family, is very heavily monitored and analyzed by intelligence experts. That this is not going to go out without a lot of people looking at it and making sure that there's nothing you know nefarious in any of the writings. But what Howard Safer and others say is that, look, you know, these are terrorists, and they can communicate in code sometimes. They can write propaganda. They can say other things. And you just sometimes don't know that even something that it seems innocuous on paper isn't something maybe a little bit more sinister.
What a vexing issue. The other big story you've been covering is, I love the name, Clinton Palooza, and we're not talking about Hillary.
No, we're not. We're talking about Bill Clinton, who he seems to, whenever he decides to kind of step out and do things in public, he doesn't do it in a small way.
No, he doesn't.
He launched another meeting, a yearly meeting of his Clinton Global Initiative. This is the group that kind of works to end world poverty and lift the rights of some of the indigent and some others who are oppressed around the world. It's a very good organization with a lot of noble ambitions. So this week, it kicked off another one of its annual meetings. But he does this the same week that President Obama is in New York to address the UN, that Hillary Clinton is in New York, and both Mr. Obama and Mrs. Clinton are going to be also at the G20 summit. And while he did this, Mr. Clinton also made the rounds of no fewer than 5 network talk shows, sometimes on for an hour at a time, specifically Larry King Live. But he's weighing in on some of the key issues of the day. He said repeatedly that he didn't want to step on anyone's toes, that he doesn't have policy authority anymore, and he doesn't want to speak for the president. He doesn't want to step over the president's toes or Hillary Clinton's toes. But he is asked about these issues like Afghanistan, like Iraq, like what's going on with the Iranians, and he weighs in and sometimes weighs in with advice for the president. So there is a thought by some that he's kind of crowding the stage a bit. This week,
and I was even watching President Obama on with John King on Sunday, and John King specifically asked him about Obama's trip to North Korea, and one almost has to imagine that we wouldn't be talking about that now if this wasn't going on.
No, I don't think you would be. Again, when Mr. Clinton decides to do something, anything in a public nature, he gets a lot of attention. He is, you know, political analysts will tell you he is a megawatt star, at least politically. The guy just does command a lot of attention. Is he overshadowing the president? Probably not in the general balance of things. The president still has the bully pulpit. He still is covered everywhere he goes. But it's just events like this that kind of make you think that the stage maybe is getting a bit crowded.
And we just very quickly, because I know you are actually up in covering the G20 summit. What's the buzz up there?
Well, the buzz is, you know, the anxiety over the potential protests here. We've been making the rounds, talking to small business owners this morning, talking to the mayor this morning. I spoke to him just a short time ago. They are all anxious about what the protesters are going to do, whether they're going to be able to be contained. There are people among the protesters who are called anarchists, and they do exactly what the name implies. They are here to create anarchy and create chaos. They have been known in London this past year and in Seattle 10 years ago to do a lot of damage when they set their mind to it. They're kind of the wild card in all of this. A lot of the protesters will be contained and will be peaceful. Some of them, however, may not be, and some small business owners are worried about it. Some of them are shutting down over the next couple of days. It's a real disruption for them, and so that's kind of where the you know, the flip side of the glorious summit comes into play here in Pittsburgh.
And there must be a just incredible security presence already building up for this this event.
That's right. The city of Pittsburgh says it may use up to 4,000 officers. Not sure yet whether they would have to borrow any from other municipalities, but they might. And, you know, there's Secret Services, of course, buzzing all around here. It's a nightmare for them as well. They've got to protect several dignitaries. So, yeah, security is huge. They are cordoning off huge areas of the city. We're sitting now at the convention center where it's essentially going to be a red zone for the next couple of days. If you're not credentialed and you're not the right person, you're not getting anywhere near here. There's a kind of a wider green zone outside of a broader band outside the red zone where pedestrians and others can go in, but vehicles cannot. So they are really clamping down over the next couple of days here in Pittsburgh. It's going to be a very different city.